You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Welcome again from the Physics Ed Podcast. Glad to have you no matter where you are around this world of ours. We are talking science, and today we're learning about Nature Mapper, which is Australia's citizen science platform, which links all these different bits of data together in one spot. Very powerful if you want to do some science. And so today we hang out with Aaron Clausen and Dr. Kate Crawford. We get to learn exactly what Nature Mapper is and how you might be able to apply this in your classroom. It's a fascinating link between biology and data, and I reckon you'll get a bit out of this. So let's get right into it. You've got an interesting way to help people understand what is out there in nature. I'd love to know more about it, why you've done this, all that sort of thing. So Kate, I might pass the baton to you.
To me? Well, the reason I'm absolutely enthralled with this is because I've always been wandering around in the bush. In fact, I once lived in a shack in the forest, and I really care about the biodiversity. And now that I live in the city, I'm a bit amazed at how people don't. But more importantly than that, the reason I really got interested in this is, unlike a lot of sort of education things where people, you know, learn from books what the right answer is, this is about anyone with a phone wandering around in the bush can add a sighting of something they're interested in. The system tells them the scientific name as well as, you know, its common name, if it's a plant or an animal or an insect, and then off it goes into a quality data system. So the thing that enthralls me is that the whole thing has been built largely for love and from the bottom up, so that it's actually oriented. So some of this scientific information that's quite hard for people to understand about our environment is now starting to be able to be seen easily. Aaron will tell you a lot more about how we're doing that. But it's the different structure of not being top down and engaging people in doing something that's really helpful that I think is very exciting socially.
Oh, fantastic. Aaron, tell me how you got involved in this.
Well, take your mind, say, about 10 years ago, Ben, and picture you're on a mountain bike and you're going for a casual weekend ride through your local reserve, which for me, in my case, was Mount Majura in the ACT. And I used to see that place as relatively, I guess, boring, a lot of brown gum trees, a lot of dead grass, a great place to ride, but I really never thought about it as somewhere biodiverse or full of, you know, plant or animal life. And I pulled over for a bit of a rest. I did a little bit of a naughty thing and didn't stick to the form trails. And I went off this little kind of faded, patchy half track, pulled over, laid the bike down, walked around, pick up the water bottle, and then noticed something kind of glistening out of the corner of my eye, staring back at me. And I'm like, what's that? Or something's caught my attention. And anyway, it was this absolutely stunning, and I assumed it was some kind of orchid, a flower, this tiny little thing, absolutely striking, never seen anything like it. And I had this moment, this epiphany, unusual moment. I was like, wow, this, I don't know what this plant is. This is so special. And I just kind of, you know, laid down, got my phone, took all kinds of photographs and different angles before I then realized I was basically walking all over the things and I was in the middle of this little colony. So super excited. I got back home. I started making some inquiries. I got in touch with the local park care group, which is, you know, a concept that I now am quite familiar with, but a lot of these reserves and national parks have these amazing park care groups, these volunteers that really, you know, take ownership and look after them. And a lady called Waltraud Picks, who was the president of Friends of Mount Majura Park Care Group, put me in touch with Dr. Michael Mulvaney, who was an ecologist and conservation officer with ACT government. And long story short, Michael nearly fell off his chair and said, where did you find these things? Can you please send us your records? Can you send us your coordinates, any photos? And by the way, if you're out riding and you see any more of them, we want to know, we kind of want all your data. We thought these plants were down to under 200 left in the wilderness, and we believe they were pretty close to being extinct. So yeah, that had an interesting effect on me. Obviously, then I kept writing, trying to find them, and found more and more, and other species and other related orchids that kind of have a relationship with that species of orchid. And then I learn all about the mycorrhizal fungi that makes these things grow. And I kept emailing Michael every afternoon, "Hey, Michael, found some cool stuff. Here you go, here you go." And it had to basically be tracked in a spreadsheet, and it became such a cumbersome task. And I had a little bit of time. So that was about September. And I think by about December that year, and then it was the Christmas holidays, had a little bit of time off work. And my background being software engineering, IT, I basically thought, well, you know, maybe I can whip up a simple little prototype and just send Michael the link instead of 1,000 different emails. And fast forward to today, and that was basically 10 years ago, and that's kind of how it all started.
Wow. No, I was thinking, so as you're describing that, I don't know if you guys know, but I used to do bushland regeneration, used to do a lot of bushland restoration projects before I pivoted and started becoming a bit of an educator. So I was just thinking about what it was like going out there. I did do vegetation surveys and whatnot, and we did the best we could, but sometimes, especially when you're talking orchidaceae, like orchids, I mean, sometimes they're just straight up not flowering and rather hard to find. And I could see there it was by pure chance, almost a blunder, that you come across these things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy, isn't it? And as you say, I mean, you can have a poor season or a low rainfall and they literally just don't pop up, and you can go back the next year and there's 1,000 of them.
Yeah, wow. Fascinating. So wind this forward, we've got an actual app that helps the public contribute. So what's it look like? How does it work for someone who doesn't know what they're doing whatsoever? They stumble across this app and they want to start using it.
So the app is really the simplest part of the platform. It is for data collection only. So if you're anybody in the community and you see any kind of plant or animal that you might feel is a little bit interesting or a little bit unusual, then the Nature Mapper app is the way that you basically go click, take a photo and click upload. And that's it. So everything else then goes into essentially the website, where we've built up this, you know, incredible community of over 200 expert moderators. And you know, these people, like, they're so absolutely impressive. It's this community of, you know, book authors and renowned experts of particular species, the leading grass expert in Australia, the dragonfly or author of multiple dragonfly books, all these guys, anybody who's anybody is kind of on there. And they're so generous with their time. They're kind of helping this community learn from them and sharing their knowledge. And the minute you upload your record from the app, it basically goes into the platform and fires off this kind of really big workflow. And it says, well, what have you uploaded here? Okay, it's a plant. Step one, I'll throw it at the AI and see if the AI can identify it within, you know, 2 seconds. And half the time it will. A lot of the time we're still training it. Just depends on what you upload. And then it will basically go down in like a hierarchical structure and go, have I got a plant expert? Have I got a wattle expert? Have I actually got a wattle shrub expert? And it will go down and down and become more and more, honed in to the most appropriate person. Alerts are firing off all over the place. And the end result is the user receives an identification of what they've reported. We've informed the user if they've contributed to all kinds of priority species lists. So, for example, we've got the Commonwealth Threatened Species Commissioner's 110 priority species loaded in. So the system will resolve it to that list and thank you for your contribution kind of thing. And, you know, finally, your data, this is the real clincher for us. And I think one of the differentiators is, as much as we love and we see the value of people sharing beautiful, cute photos on social media, right? Because it's inspirational. It's it raises awareness and it gets people involved to care about the environment. But the tragedy with a lot of that stuff shared on social media is it still might be completely invisible in a government's actual decision-making database. So our focus is very much converting these inspirational records and these photos and ensuring that it's in the Commonwealth Biodiversity Data Repository, ensuring that it's in the CSIRO Atlas of Living Australia, ensuring that it's in the New South Wales BioNet database, because through all our kind of discussions, we've learned these databases are quite different and they're used really for different purposes. So it's critical for us to ensure our user records end up in that one, end up in that one, and end up in that one.
That's where it's really powerful, because I think about the database, because there's a few apps out there nowadays that are producing this kind of information, but it's siloed, and this is not.
Very, very critical and really, really inspiring, having gone through this process, I think, because this is starting. The other really critical thing is that other people can, you know, the users can also find out about collections of Christmas beetles at one level and collections of things that they're really inspired about at another. So the mapping's shared publicly, as well as going, you know, through this process. So it allows people to, you know, actually know what's going on. And we're like the, you know, harnessing up the eyes on the ground, but making that quality data the same data that's now considered by government. I think that's really important.
Well, I'm just thinking from a, I mean, I've been involved in some web design stuff here and there, and half the battle is making them talk to each other.
Yeah.
APIs and all that sort of thing. I mean, I can see, so if you, this is not a visual medium, but Aaron shook his head and nodded at the same time.
Yeah, I can feel your pain with that one, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that working with government databases, I mean, they were never truly designed to deal with that way. How'd you go about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, they're all trying really, really hard independently, but you know, as you alluded to, bringing it together and having this kind of, you know, consistent architecture is so much more difficult than what it appears on the surface. We've exposed, you know, an API, a modern for the techos out there. It's called a REST-based API, and it's, you know, considered the modern way of exchanging information between systems. But, you know, the difference between us feeding that data to, say, CSIRO versus ACT government or New South Wales BioNet, it is, at the moment, as of today, these separate systems accept subtly different data formats. So I guess we've had to have a little bit of flexibility and send a particular kind of structure to one repository, make some little tweaks to get it in the format for the other downstream data partner. But the Commonwealth, so there's a team within the Department of Climate Change and the Environment. It's kind of a team we're quite excited about. They're doing some really good work.
Fabulous
work. And they're trying to bring this, pull this together in a standard called the ABIS, Australian Biodiversity Information Standard. And that's exactly what it's aiming to solve. So there'll be one consistent format. It will be designed to carry common attributes like, you know, was this a nesting site? How tall was the plant? Was the plant in flower, yes or no? What's the latitude, longitude? All this common biodiversity data structure will just be in a consistent, interchangeable format. And we're basically working closely with that department and trying to be, I guess, one of their early like pilot partners to kind of put that format through its paces and make sure it holds up in the real world.
What's the thing? You've married AI and 200 experts, volunteer experts. Mind you, how you got about to that would have been a lot of work to be able to get them together.
And a lot of users who find people in local places, you know, to...
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, I think about, I mean, whether you're in a state body, a federal body and whatnot, your data is precious, and having a third party, which effectively this app is, feeding you information, there's a lot of trust and validation required. Otherwise, I mean, gosh, this is really a discussion around data, really, because data can be great or data can muddy things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there's this, like it's a sensitive topic, but it's an elephant in the room. We just got to talk about it, right? So we're in this era now where it's becoming increasingly easier for anybody to whip up a quick app and create an app and look, I've launched my app. And if you fast forward, from just a few years ago, it's getting to the point where these apps are just spawning off by the hundreds, and it's like there'll be an app for I want to report a crocodile in Northern Territory. Well, I need the Northern Territory crocodile reporting app. And then there'll be a wildflower app in the north of Western Australia because that government, they're concerned with their patch and they're concerned with their flowers. They might get funding and launch an app for that. You stand back and you go, well, as a user, I mean, there's 500 apps here. And if I go for a simple holiday an hour down the road and cross over the border, the app that I'm currently comfortable with, that I've got credentials for, that I've got my reputation, my kind of public profile. And it's almost people are creating this journal of everything they see and do and learn, which is like what we love about Nature Mapper. But as soon as you go an hour away, it just becomes irrelevant. And then you're on the app store and you're going, oh, different government, different species. Gee, which app's the best? And you know what? Which downstream database does my data actually end up in? And it's just sprawling. So we're going, look, don't care what species you want to report, don't care what jurisdiction you're in, and we'll upload your data into all of the relevant downstream databases, and you don't have to worry, and you don't have to have 100 different apps.
So we
Gosh,
now have uploads from Norfolk Island and places like that now.
Wow. It's almost Zapier for biodiversity. That's the thing. If you're listening in, if you don't know what Zapier is, that is the app that makes other apps talk to each other when they shouldn't. Way to think about that. But yeah, I was just sitting there thinking, so this particular interview is listening in. We're recording it in December and we just know everyone's going on holidays, so it's come out in 2024. I'm just looking at the date on my calendar here. So we've got this is a discussion amongst three Australians, and we know it's the 11th of the 12th, 2023. But I also know there's people listening to this in the US, and that 11/12 makes no sense because you put the month first, not the day first, and even just the structure of that data causes dramas overseas. So I can imagine as soon as you take this idea and start looking at the global level, it becomes a, oh gosh, column K doesn't match column L anymore. It's just, oh wow.
Yeah, bang on. And I think Kate mentioned a good point earlier that the way we've gone about this design, is very much bottom up. So we think of top down as, I'm going to launch a website today. Today it's actually empty. I don't have any data in it, but I'm going to announce it as global from day one, and then I'm going to fill in the gaps beneath it. Like that's the kind of top down. And we've like, no, we're going to go to each individual local park care group and people that actually care about their patch. We're going to get them to talk. We're going to get the system safeguarding all their species. We're going to get it reporting into their local databases, and then we're going to feed that up in reverse and replicate it outwards. So that's probably the trickier approach, but the result is when you're final, like it's taken us 10 years, when you finally get to a point when you go, okay, we're ready and we're confident that this will now scale across Australia without compromising on data quality. That's the beauty of the bottom up approach, but there's so much localization. So when you're talking about overseas or America, like we've so Jen Smith's amazing GIS analyst expert that helps us, that gives us a hand on Nature Mapper. She has loaded in every single national park geospatial boundary for Australia as a polygon. So you can basically go onto Nature Mapper and go Kakadu National Park, and it will bring up, the species list and a graph of the biodiversity dashboard and all kinds of, subscribe and export for Kakadu. So yeah, if you just think if we were to consider doing that for anywhere else, like even New Zealand, it's a big task because we're trying to do it properly. And then that's where funding and sustainability for our team just becomes critical. Otherwise, we're like, we just can't expand beyond Australia. We're
Oh,
Yeah.
I mean, it's an extraordinary amount of work. I mean, you're 10 years forward, it's ready to effectively work well across all of Australia. And undoubtedly, there'll be people listening in saying, hang on, we're involved in so-and-so bush care group. We didn't know about this either.
Yeah.
And so that'll produce its own thing. There is a lot of work. There really is. I mean, I was just thinking from the user perspective too, not so much the people who are the biodiversity coordinators and whatnot, but there will be, undoubtedly, because it's an education podcast, there's a lot of teachers listening to this. So it's going to be teachers and students and whatnot who may want to get involved with this. And I mean, is this all this data? If they go download it, do they press buttons where they can and suddenly get this information? Can they go to their local national park and get species list straight off? Like, how does it work for them?
Yeah, 100%. So there's a section on there just called maps. So we call a reserve like a map. It's like a polygon. So there's a boundary around your local park. And increasingly so, Lewis Choi, who's our citizen science officer in the ACT, he's basically going to all these local schools and he's helping them create their own polygon, which is basically a boundary around their school turf.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really cool. And the students are then jumping on. They're all grabbing the app or borrowing like the school's device and basically going upload. And straight, like, you know, free of charge for schools, they can basically download an accurate real-time field guide of all the things that exist in their patch.
Which could be extraordinary, because I was just thinking about, because I remember working in some threatened communities, and I mean, I think Acacia pubescens, Grevillea cerise, there's a few of them. I was thinking, I live in the Sydney basin, so I was just thinking of those ones, where they were turning up in places you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you could have students have serious linkage into their, I mean, what they thought was just a quote-unquote garden has something of serious significance, and they might actually well look after it. G'day, it's Ben here. I hope you're enjoying this particular chat. And guess what? There's so much more you can do with your science teaching. Head on over to physicseducation.com.au. There are complete and comprehensive teaching units that you can get your hands on. If you click on the top, you will find there are a whole bunch of scope and sequences, cross-curricular teaching ideas, hundreds of printable experiments and activities, videos, risk assessments, marking rubrics, you name it. It's all there and it's all linked to the curriculum, and it's something that you can implement right now. Head on over to physicseducation.com.au and check out what's on offer.
100%. And I reckon a lot of that just comes down to beginner's luck. You go in with ignorance.
Beginner's luck for you. Beginner's luck for all of us, really.
Yes. That's right. But if you leave them unrestricted, it's like, wow, things that you don't expect will show up.
Oh, they really are. I mean, I'm just thinking about, I actually won't name the spot because there are like 30 seriously threatened Grevillea types in a particular, I'll just say cemetery for now, that are straight up in the public view. Yeah. And they're in a line, they're one little spot and maybe one extra couple of areas and that's it. And if you knew what you're looking at, you know what I mean? So it's just, wow. But at the same point, there could be easily something like that two suburbs over.
Yeah.
And growing there and people don't even realize.
100%. And we're trying to, that's a really key point as well, because, you know, you end up with all this data and associative data ultimately in the database, and we're trying to do a lot more now of surfacing the trends. And so we've got this little thing that we call in like a biodiversity dashboard for a park or reserve. So you go there, you know, it tells you, first of all, it gives it a score. So based on all the different things we know that exists at Kakadu National Park, it actually has a species richness of above 3000, which is, you know, really good. And you'll find a lot of stuff in this place. There's also a little chart that basically shows people and kind of gives them a real-time feedback loop of your effort surveying this reserve is going up. And look, as a result, the species richness has actually increased directly due to your efforts. But then some of the cool stuff we're able to do shortly is like keep an eye out for, you know, here's some really endangered species that occur 5Ks down the road. Now, we haven't received a record here yet, but they're highly likely to exist. So if you're looking for something to do or something to target on the weekend, you know, here's actually a top 10 list of places we suggest you go out and explore.
It's extraordinary. I actually think of a very old story, nothing to do with Australian wildlife, but it is a story that's been around. The coelacanth.
this old lobe-finned fish hanging off the African coast. People didn't realize it was around. Suddenly, you can imagine zoologists lost their mind when they saw they were being hunted just all the time. It's just like, oh, they're just the fish off our coast, not realizing they're literally hunting a living fossil. This could easily be happening. I mean, there could easily be things that are used daily by the locals, and they've got no idea it's threatened, endangered, etc.
100%. So, you know, we've realized as well the vital, the importance of having partner organizations that are not only governments but researchers as well, right? So the people that are the experts in a particular species or genus or category, whether it's butterflies or whatever, and we're trying to load in all of what they consider their priority species lists into the platform, you know, so Threatened Species Commissioner, I mentioned there's 110, but there's in different jurisdictions, a different list of priority species for that region. And we're trying to, whenever somebody uploads anything, the system will basically, you know, wash against any of those lists and try and find a match and go, you know, where you are based on what you've reported. This is actually a really big deal over in the top of Western Australia.
So I'm curious if you got some people listening in who might want to be involved, and I'm thinking from the educated consumer level, but there's also people who'll be literally looking after patches of land in different ways. So if they were going to start, even if they already have some lists around and they were going to work with you, how might they help you do your job?
We'd probably negotiate that with them. That would be the first principle, because this place, you know, sort of flexes in. We would love their expertise and to join in. And I think at some level, we would probably do something similar, architecturally at least, to our school surveys, where we would sort of negotiate with them, well, what do you really want to do? And we'd remind them we have all the protections of endangered species and things in place, because I'm very aware, you know, those sort of researchers are going to be very conscious of that. But we would want to work with them and then see if we can also enable some of our users to work with them, because this, to me, educationally, is the magic. If they do their survey as well as publishing it in a top journal, okay, if our users can benefit because we have this really well-validated biodiversity index and score on a place of beautiful magnificence, our users can go on going out there and mapping and making sure it's all still there. One sighting we had recently was by someone who is an environmental operational in the ACT, and he is pointing out that a whole lot of tree ferns had been dead the last time he was in, you know, and he had an old sighting, and now they're all flourishing because the climate's improved in that little ecosystem.
Which is cool, and the system automatically linked them together and drew up a timeline dead, 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 thriving.
So it's also, hugely effective and efficient for anyone operating in any wildlife situation to preserve stuff, to get more data than is normally. We're finding the, apart from not being very accessible to most people, a lot of the research is not conducted every year, all the time, over time.
I mean, I was just thinking about
that's why I think this data, being quality data, helps, you know, with as much expertise behind it as we can manage. That is what makes it so effective.
There's some patterns of metadata within this too, that might actually come. You've got your direct scientific work done, and then people look at all the journals out there, and then they actually pin those bits of data together and produce more journals. So I was just thinking about it. We get a flowering plant. Oh, there's flowering in autumn. No, normally do that till September. And then you can overlay what's going on with weather and whatnot. Now you can kind of see, actually, you know what? We can get predictive trends now. This is really fantastic. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. No, that's how we see it going. Yep.
Mm.
Yeah. So some of that phenology stuff, like we try and surface, we're surfacing a bit of that at the moment. But along those lines, something that like I'm really interested in is all the associative data. So, you know, we tend to work out that this particular wasp always exists near a particular bush or a species of orchid or whatever it might be. And then in the future, we're predicting and going, well, that reserve has this tree and this type of soil. Therefore, once again, keep a lookout for particular insects or particular birds or whatever it might be. It all just, yeah, it absolutely all links up.
Oh, that's fantastic. So there will be some people who would love to know where they get said app. I'm guessing it's the iTunes thing and whatnot. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%, Ben. Yeah, Apple, iTunes, iStore, Android, Google Play, or the website. The website kind of does everything, or the app is for uploading your data.
No worries. And as usual, we put those links in the show notes for you to click and use it. And if you're loving it, or if you've got feedback for it, I'm guessing you guys would love to hear.
We would love to hear that. We want feedback. That is how we grow and we can do the service. Okay.
Yeah, it's a really user-driven system, Ben. So like if you go to naturemapper.org right now, click, browse around, have a look, I would say 99% of the things you're looking at have all originated as crazy ideas from a user at one point in time that said, hey, wouldn't it be good if you could do it? And we're like, hey, good idea. Yep. There you go. How's that? Oh, tweak this, move to the left. All right. So the whole platform has been really built based on user feedback.
Oh, user experience is key. They're the ones using it.
And they're the ones with the eyes on the ground and needing to have those eyes really well informed. So coming back to your metadata, I think it's just one of the things I'm noticing is happening in our news things. Is we would like to also, if there was research or something interesting happening around this data, we'd like to send that out information with a link to our users as well, say from your place, you know, if someone was doing something interesting.
Oh, makes sense. And considering that you're effectively aggregated said data, it'd be fantastic for you guys to know what's going on. That's really awesome.
Well, they collected it, so it's fair that they get some feedback if someone does some research inspired by what they've done. You know,
oh, for sure.
Be really interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just thinking, Ben, like you touched on the idea of, you know, partners and organisations or people, how do they participate? Like one of the areas that would be the absolute holy grail would be for every reserve and national park across Australia, for those local experts to get in touch with us, to go to naturemapper.org. So if you're somebody that's in a park care group, or you volunteer and pull some weeds out on the weekend, or you know you've put some fences or barriers up to protect some of those important species, we can create a polygon. If we haven't got it already, we can certainly create new ones and give you, it's like your own community page for your own reserve that you'll be able to go to, upload, and you'll actually see the impacts and the things you're planning and the work you're doing. It will be graphed and it will be kind of visualized and exposed, some of the work that those groups are actually doing. So those local experts on the ground right across Australia would, I think, absolutely make the thing, you know, hum.
Absolutely. So if you're listening in, you know someone, or if you are that person, reach out. It seems like a good idea. Absolutely. Look, thank you very much, Kate and Aaron, for jumping on. I know it's a very busy time as we wrap up our year, but this is a very powerful app and I can see it growing really well.
Yes, I think so. And hugely, hugely valuable for the users too, because they learn so much from each other. It's fascinating to watch in the community how much people can learn just for themselves as well as helping everyone else.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much. Have a fantastic afternoon.
Thanks very much for having us, Ben. Great to chat to you, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you've been enjoying the Physics Ed podcast. We love making science make sense. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? If you're outside of Australia, you can connect with us via a virtual excursion. See our website for more.
So I hope you enjoyed that chat with Dr. Kate Crawford and Aaron Clausen from Nature Mapper. Now, if you want to know a bit more, head on over to Nature Mapper, so nature, MAPR.org. You'll be able to find all about it and how you can get involved. I really enjoyed this chat.
I love a bit of biology. I did train in it a long time ago, and linking this with big data and map sets, all these sorts of things, is incredibly important as we think about our citizen science in Australia. And perhaps if you're listening overseas, are there things around in your country? And if they're not, maybe you can get about creating this. It's a genuine need. Look, I hope you enjoyed this. My name is Ben from Physics Education, and I hope you enjoyed the Physics Ed podcast. Hope to catch you another time.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au